The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, friends, and welcome to Afternoons with Mike, day two of the CPAC convention. I'm coming to you from booth number 26 in Broadcast Row, and what a joy it has been for me to be here, my first CPAC, and of course it's the first CPAC that's ever been in Orlando. Usually this event is held in the DC area, but because of the lockdown up there, we heard from Governor DeSantis today that Florida is open for business. And, well, that's why CPAC is here. I personally am very grateful for the leadership that Governor DeSantis has given us in Florida, that we are able to have businesses open, churches are able to worship together. Thankful to God for that. On the program today, a lot of fun for you. To begin with, we're going to hear from State Senator Joe Gruters, and that's going to be coming up in just a moment. Also on the program with me from Orlando and the Timothy Plan, Art Alley will be here, and he's going to be talking about all of the issues that are implications to those who are investors and why the Timothy Plan exists, the purposes for that great organization. Also, there's a couple of husband and wife team that have a radio show in Indianapolis. It's called the Conservative Commandos Radio Show, and they are on iHeart and some of the other syndicated channels. And fact is, our friends in the Villages are probably familiar with this couple. They're going to be dropping by. And because of the fact that he's from Indiana, we share that common bond. That's my home state. And we're going to be talking about something that he's done research on, and that is the namesake Hoosiers. Where did it come from? What does it mean to be a Hoosier? That's all coming up. Finally, my guest will be Hans von Spakovsky, and he's with the Heritage Foundation. We're going to be talking about the important issue of voters and voting regulations that we feel that many times were broken in this last election cycle. So we'll hear from the Heritage Foundation and Hans on that. Okay, coming up first, it's Joe Gruters, State Senator for Florida, right here on The Shepherd. Happy to have on the line Joe Gruters with me. Joe is with the Florida Republican Party. He serves the Florida Senate representing the 23rd District, and that is down around Sarasota County and part of Charlotte County. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on today.
You know, it's exciting, and I know that your involvement is iffy, whether you're going to be able to make it over to the CPAC or not. But first of all, give me just kind of a first brush as to what thoughts you had when you heard this big conference was actually being moved from D.C. to Orlando.
Well, listen, it's always exciting. It's great to live in a state like Florida where you have a governor who values freedom and liberty, where we're open, and where we could have these big events like this. And this is important for a lot of reasons, but it's helping the Republicans come back together, obviously, with the president coming on Sunday. Yeah, and I may show up tomorrow. I think they're giving me some type of award tomorrow night. I'm just also a practicing tax CPA, and we have sessions starting on Tuesday, and so I'm trying to get as much stuff as I possibly can done. Hopefully I'll show up, but for the entire group of Republicans that are there across the country, this is the first step in that we need to come back together, because we have to have a united front as we head into the 2022 cycle. And I think this is a great way to do it.
You know, all Republicans I know were a bit shocked, and I think a lot of the United States and the world as well, with the outcome happening the way it did, with the process of voting really being, I think, seriously maimed in the process. And now the question is whether or not the steps can be made to make America's confidence in our voting system secure. What are your thoughts about that, Joe? Do you think that we can get back to a point where people will feel that when they cast a vote, it's going to count?
Well, that's a great question, and there's no doubt about it that Florida is the gold standard. We 21.5 million people. We have such a diverse, both geographic and population-wise. We're controlled here with 67 independent supervisor elections elected by their individual counties, the Republicans and Democrats, and we were able to get the results done before midnight and finalize our results in a way to where Florida really should be the model. And that's why Ronna McDaniel selected me to be the chairman of the Election Integrity Committee the whole time. So it's one of our job, it's my job, to, along with the committee, to figure out exactly what went wrong in 2020 and to help push, you know, not only model legislation, but to make sure that we do have everything in order for the 2022 cycle, because we need to restore that credibility and the certainty amongst the population. So we have a tall task ahead of us, but we're ready to go. We actually have our one of our big meetings tomorrow on this subject, and we're certainly going to do all we can to make sure we restore that credibility that's certainly needed.
It is certainly needed, and a lot more than just one election cycle being lost is gone. If the people's confidence can't be restored, then that is a huge, huge loss for America. And we all will be praying for you on that and praying for our country as well. I know that you were a driving force in the law in 2019 that was known as SB 198, which had to do with immigration and customs enforcement. And with all the things that President Biden has done in just the first couple of days, that really has to do with a lot of changes and maybe undoing some of President Trump's immigration policies. What are your thoughts about Florida, and where do we stand now in the days ahead?
Well, listen, we've done a couple of good things in Florida. First and foremost, we passed that 198, which is a sanctuary city bill, which requires a coordination between the federal government and local governments. Obviously, with what Biden is doing, I know the Citizens United and other groups are going to come out and start opposing what Biden is trying to do, or in this case, undo in terms of some of our immigration efforts. And it's that is an issue that will continue to be first and foremost on a lot of people's minds. Is the unchecked illegal immigration that we're seeing along our borders. And the fact that Biden is now no longer doing it is going to reinstitute the catch and release, is trying to stop deportations of sex offenders and violent criminals, and it's just super unfortunate. But listen, we're even more reason why we have come together as a party, and we all know that elections do have consequences. And there's no doubt that they're going to do everything they possibly can, because I don't think they believe that America should be first. But I'm a big believer in the American First policy, putting our workers number one, making sure our workers are protected, making sure our borders are protected, making sure we're doing the right thing, and so that's what we're down here at CPAC to do is to rebuild essentially our the ground game, and hopefully Florida will be the model. Crush the Democrats on the ground in voter registration and turnout, and obviously we increase our margin for Trump threefold here in Florida. We picked up 5 state house seats, 2 congressional seats, and a single state senate seat. But hopefully we could take what we do well here in Florida and take it on the road and help other states be as successful as what we were able to accomplish here.
I'm sure you're getting, as all of the state senators and the representatives would be getting, a lot of inquiries from other states about how Florida has been able to do as well in the COVID crisis as we have done. And yet our state continues to look good with infection rates going down and businesses, for the most part, being open. Not saying that there weren't some pretty strong fatalities in the business world in Florida early on last year, but we have bounced back, haven't we?
Yeah, we've bounced back. Listen, all you have to do is look at the residential real estate market, and it's on fire. It's because everybody's fleeing these states, and that's why you're seeing all these, you know, northern and liberal oriented states start opening up, because they're literally losing their population. The people that can and can afford to pick up and move, they are moving, because why do you want to sit in your house for a year or two when the science doesn't back it? And here in Florida, we've done it right. Like I said, it all comes down to leadership. We have a great governor in Ron DeSantis and helping us, and a big believer in freedom and liberty. And so, listen, we're going to continue to push and do all we can to help small businesses succeed, so we allow individuals to be good providers for their families.
One of the big things that our audience really wants to see something done on, and we've been praying about for many, many years, and that is a plan that will one day end Roe v. Wade abortions. And I know that your heart has been to see that as well. You've worked hard on working to make a ban on abortions, especially after 20 weeks of fertilization. Share just a little bit about your heart and your passion on that topic.
Well, I'm a Republican because I believe in life. I think life is precious from the conception to natural death. I started off on my journey in politics as a board member of Florida Right to Life. I've filed and sponsored the pro-life legislation all 4 years I've been in office. It's the issue that's most important to me, and so I will continue to try to champion policies that protect life on all levels. And it's a and yes, there's no question that's the most important issue for me.
Well, I tell you what, it's one that we would all say at The Shepherd, thank you, sir, for all of the leadership and the hard work that you have expended on this one. And I can't think of a single most important topic other than that one that would say, if you're going to hang your hat on something, I would want to be hanging mine on trying to end what has got to be one of the most crazy and nonsensical things that I believe our country's ever gotten involved with. And yet to this day, we're seeing a fight go on, and we're praying for the rights of the unborn to be represented. And thank you for doing that.
Thank you. I appreciate the fact you mentioned it. And like that, that's what got me into politics. And so I'll continue to be a champion of life.
Well, I tell you what, when you're there for reasons like that, and we know that sadly, a lot of people who are in politics, especially in D.C., are much more there for power and for, let's just say, having a job, but not because they've got the things that are driving you, the passions and the purposes that you're standing for. I just want to say we're proud of the work you've done, sir, and thank you so much for all of the effort. And I know you stand against a lot of pressure as well. And it must be so difficult. I can't even comprehend what it would be like getting up every day and having to deal with it when the atmosphere is kind of charged around you, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's when you have the right focus and you listen, you have to listen to God. I have faith that things are going to work out for the best, and I put my faith in Him. And I'm just fortunate to be able to serve in this position, to be able to go to bat for things that I believe are important. And it's everybody, especially your listening audience, if you could say prayers for all the people that serve, that they do make the right decision.
Not always easy. Not always easy, but we are going to be praying for you. This is State Senator Joe Gruters, and he is from the Sarasota County, and we're just honored to have you on our program today. And I do hope to, if you do make it over to CPAC, stop and see me at booth 26, my friend.
You got it. Thanks so much for having me on today, and have a wonderful time at CPAC.
God bless you too, Joe. Thank you. Coming up, a really fun talk with the originators of the Conservative Commandos radio show. I'm going to have J.D. and Christina here, J.D. and Christina Manier. Hey, this is a treat. I've got a couple of radio people who double in a lot of other activities as well for the Lord. This is J.D. Manier and Christina, a couple. They are really a dynamic couple, doing a lot. J.D. and Christina are the host of a program that's on the radio called The Conservative Commando. So some of our listeners may well, especially those in the villages and our station up in the Ocala area, have probably heard your program. And here you are on The Shepherd. Welcome to my program.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's great to be at CPAC and to make new friends, and we'll get to something that kind of drew us in together from a simple little comment that I made. I can't believe it, and that's coming up in a moment. But first of all, give us just a little bit of an overlay about what you do on your radio show.
Well, we cover a lot of news, and when we unfurl our banner later today, as we broadcast, it says where the newsmakers go to be heard. So we like talking with Mike Lindell. We broach on the deeper subjects. We love defending the Constitution, but we have a lot of Christians who come on the show, from Father Pavone, you know, and pro-life, to strong, you know, charismatic Protestants. I mean, we cover the whole gamut.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a political show, but you'll soon find out that it's seasoned with a lot of Christian ministry too.
And you're a Gideon yourself. That is such an honorable thing, and I know that I've been numerous times in church gatherings where a member would come and speak and money be raised to put these Bibles in hotel rooms. Is that movement still as strong as it ever has been?
Well, it is. It's been different because of COVID, but we are going strong, and now I think we're in about our 112th year passing out the Bibles. But it's more than just the motels and hotels. That's what everybody, you know, associates us with. But we're in, I delivered to the police and fire departments in my home city of Indianapolis, those testaments, workers, testaments.
Yeah.
And so we get to the college campuses and the high schools and the schools and the hospitals. But the Word of God goes out, you know, like Isaiah 55:11, and never returns void, and goes out in a beautiful way.
It's wonderful. And how many lives, countless lives, have been touched and changed just in the right moment, I think, of how many people I've heard that would have maybe thought about suicide. And in the moment, there is a Bible that changed their lives. So thank you for that and all the work. Christina, you're a pastor as well at a church, and also involved in a lot of other...
Yeah, I'm a lot... we call it outreach.
Yes.
But that's what we're supposed to do with the gospel, is reach out to many.
Right.
And to those that have never even heard it. And it's part of even a missionary endeavor, because I also been able to speak with Right to Life in Europe and places, and because our heart's cry is for the right kind of living and for our babies to be alive. And then I work many times in the prisons, ministering, speaking, mentoring, and also dealing with those that have been in sex trafficking. I myself was spared of that years ago when I was 15.
Oh my goodness.
It was amazing. That brought me into a whole path of the Lord and spared my life and allowed me to move into my whole life has been the ministry and serving God.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I noticed when I walked by your booth, which is right next to ours, I noticed that you had the word Indiana. So I paused and I said, hey, fellow Hoosier here. And that just started a whole conversation, because I didn't know all about it, but you guys have had a project that you've been involved with, and it's called the Harry Hoosier Project. I'd never heard about it, so fill us in.
Well, in 2015, started thinking about, hey, our Indiana 200th year bicentennial is 2016, and I've lived in Indiana all my life. How do we really get the Hoosier nickname?
Yeah.
And
there's been a lot of jokes for years. What is a Hoosier? And the jokes that I've heard some of the jokes I won't even mention what they are. They're a little bit maybe colorful, but it's a lot of them are just crazy stories.
Well, we started to investigate, and I imagine your listeners have heard of Dave Barton and Wall Builders, and he helped us quite a bit. And I had an old book. My grandfather lived to be 100 years old, and he left me with a bunch of ancient books. He died about 12, 15 years ago. And I stumbled on a chapter on a guy named Hoosier, Harry Hoosier, America's greatest preacher during our founding. And Harry happened to be a black preacher, and he was a Methodist circuit rider, worked with Francis Asbury. In fact, he started out as the carriage driver.
Mm.
It didn't take long for Francis to say, good grief, you got a greater anointing to preach than I do.
My goodness.
But he is the guy who was friends with George Washington, Betsy Ross, and he traveled thousands of miles. And as Francis Asbury would say, gosh, Harry would baptize more people in one day than the average Methodist clergyman back in England their entire career.
Isn't that something?
And he was a rock star. And,
so how did the name, since he was in that area, how did the name for Harry Hoosier get related back to Indiana? How did that happen?
Well, it turned out Midwest State, and the evangelization through the Methodist Church was heavy at the in the late 1700s, early 1800s, mostly early 1800s. And you had that great Cane Ridge Revival, 1801 or so. And the Methodists, we were certainly in the 1800s, we were considered a Methodist state, by far the greatest denomination. And to this day, Christina, you know, she's been in Indiana 10 years, but there's a Methodist church on every corner still. And some of them, unfortunately, are now rented out because they're brick dwellings and they're kind of mausoleums. But you get the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so the name Hoosier, Harry Hoosier, was very well known, very well known. Here's the issue. Harry was born a slave in 1750 in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and he couldn't. He was illiterate. He never learned to read or write. So sometimes he would spell his name H-O-S-I-E-R, sometimes H-U-S-H-E-R, and he had a lot of different varieties. And he never was married, never had any children. So he didn't write books. People wrote about him, but he didn't leave any kind of written word about his great career. So we've encapsulated it and put all kinds of links, and it was a bicentennial legacy project for Indiana back in 2016. Here's something interesting. Here in Orlando at the Asbury Seminary out near the airport, they do have a Harry Hoosier Institute where they honor him.
Isn't that something? Did not know any of this, but
wow.
a possible beginning of the name Hoosier.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how many people in Indiana who live there,
don't know
this story?
That's right.
Well, and here's some highlights real quick. The first black preacher to preach to an all-white congregation in America,
yes.
That was Harry Hoosier, Delaware, in 1784.
Wow.
1781, prior to that, he had a very famous preaching spree outside Washington, D.C., and it was the barren fig tree parable that he told, and it was first time blacks and whites had congregated, and he preached to both, and he drew hundreds and indeed thousands later on in New York City, 1786 on 9/11. On 9/11, the old St. John Church, which still stands, that's where the first time any preacher in New York City had been written about in the newspapers. Well, the Packet wrote about him and some others. That night, 1,000-plus people turned out to listen to this evangelist.
Isn't that so?
Wow.
Great having you here. J.D. and Christina, thank you so much for coming by and telling this story, which, because of my background, being from Indiana, is of particular interest, and it's pretty great.
Right, it is.
And if you want to find out anything more about Harry, for those of us listening, those in our audience that might be from Indiana or know people from Indiana, you can simply go to this website, harryhoosierproject.org. Harry, H-A-R-R-Y, Hoosier, just the way Indiana spells it, H-O-O-S-I-E-R, project.org. And you can find out more about it, and thank you for that, giving us all of that.
Yeah, real quick, as we leave, we speak in schools. Public schools.
Okay.
Educating the kids for the real history and also all communities, not just Afro-American. And so any of us that would want to be interested in that or have us come so your kids can learn history without it being vanished and see a little bit of what's going on about it, we're more than happy to do that as well.
Well, it's great to know that. And JD and Christina, thanks for dropping by, being on the Shepherd Radio Network. Such a joy to have Art Alley. And Art is with the Timothy Plan, and we know this man. His company backs up so much that is for the cause of the Lord. And here we are at CPAC, and I didn't even know you were going to be here. You didn't know the Shepherd was going to be here.
I did not.
We kind of discovered each other. And man, first of all, Art, thank you for what you do, both with Dan Celia and with the Liberty Church, and our good friend Paul Blair, who I just love that man so much. He's a great one. But also, beyond that, what the Timothy Plan is doing, we're going to hear more about that in a moment. But tell me, first of all, this is your first CPAC as well. What were your thoughts coming, and what are your thoughts now that you're here?
Well, it is my first and your first, I guess.
And my first.
And, Mike, I've always wanted to come to CPAC. I just hadn't had the time because I'm part of Council for National Policy, which is sort of always back-to-back to this annual CPAC. But when they had it here, and it is back-to-back, so we have CPAC the end of this week, a couple of days off, and then Council for National Policy is also going to be here.
In Orlando.
In Orlando.
Well, that makes it convenient.
So it just fit. It made it really fit well for us. And I'm going to tell you, so far it's a home run. I mean, you've got people from all over America who are patriots at this event. They are excited. They are concerned. And if there's one word I sensed in the general session, it's a four-letter word called hope. Hope was expressed in there. We're not going to give up. We're not going to roll over. This thing was kicked off by our governor, Ron DeSantis, and, man, people all over America love that man.
Yes.
And rightfully so, because he speaks for us. So I can't wait for the rest of the program, but I'm delighted you're here, and thank you for having me on.
Oh, my goodness.
You must have been really desperate for getting a guest or something. I don't know.
Not at all.
I'm kidding.
It feels good to be in a land of the free. I mean, it feels good, but when you hear Florida is open for business.
Yes.
And that our schools are open, our churches are able to meet without recrimination. And there's so many things going on in America today. I think people are saying, this is not my grandfather's America. What in the world has gone on?
Well, if it was maybe not grandfather, but great-grandfather's yeah. America, they could have never pulled off what they have pulled off today. The other side of faith and values, they have pulled off an amazing experiment that showed that they can control through fear. Mm-hmm. And they use this coronavirus to do it, which has been weaponized. It is nowhere, you know, it's a virus and it can be treated very inexpensively. They don't want you doing that. But the control that it gave them, the election is one good example. I mean, they stole this election due to the fear of the virus. That's how they got all this mail-in voting and all the rest of the... it is crazy. And I'm hoping Americans get a backbone. I think we've been too prosperous for too long, and it has made us soft. And every patriot in the history of America recognized that liberty is not something you can take for granted. It must be fought for and mm-hmm. defended in every generation. And frankly, Mike, we have gotten too careless, too soft, and we stop fighting for it. And when you do that, you're going to lose it. And that's what's at stake right now.
As you evaluate what happened last year when all of the coronavirus happened and all of these things were going on, would you have thought that someone in leadership, someone in governmental leadership could have maybe recognized this for what it has turned out to be and stood up? What happened when all of these things were changed and people just let them change? Like the voting laws in these different states. Obviously, the people who did this, the people who got laws changed without due process, they must have seen a hole somewhere, a lane that was open that they were able to walk through.
These people know what they're doing. They knew what they were doing. Donald Trump tried to warn us. Donald Trump, when he took office, it was amazing because he, of all people, knew we had a very deep state.
Mm-hmm.
In all aspects of our culture, whether it's government or the universities or the media and all the rest, I think he didn't recognize how deep the deep state was.
Mm.
And that all came clear to me when they had all this evidence of massive vote fraud, massive.
And yet there and was no
nobody
evidence.
Would do anything
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
From the courts...
Yeah.
To the Justice Department, to the FBI, to every other asset. They have been infiltrating America for a long time, trying to take it down. And frankly, it's on our watch, and we have allowed this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not advocating take up your guns and let's go march on Washington. But we better start standing up for our freedoms, or we're going to kiss them goodbye. And the next generation is going to ask us the famous question that actually Mike Huckabee's daughter, Sarah
yeah.
asked
mm-hmm.
when he took her to Israel as a young girl. And she went through the Holocaust Museum at Basham over there. And, you know, he just kept an eye on her, wondering if, you know, maybe he was giving her too much. He watched her, and as they were going out, there was a guest book for comments, and he saw her go to that book, Mike, and watched what she wrote down. And she wrote, "Why didn't somebody do something?"
Mm-mm-mm. That's profound.
I mean, and yeah. Sarah's going to be here, and what a hero she's become. But I think our children or grandchildren probably are going to ask that same question in America if we don't put a stop to it now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get it to the tipping point, you can't bring it back. They are trying to have permanent, total, complete control right now with mm-hmm. House Bill 1 going on, where they're going to control every election from then on. It doesn't matter who you vote for. Like Stalin said, I don't care who votes or any of that. I care who counts the votes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem. We need to grow a backbone, stand up for our liberty, or we're going to lose it.
I agree, and it's a lot to lose there, and we're not wanting that to happen. But it is going to take people having courage.
Amen.
And I like what you also said, not losing hope. Because I think it's what we saw and what I encountered in several conversations I had post November 3rd, it was as if people, for momentarily in their shock, they felt hopeless.
Yeah.
But we're really never, those who know the Lord are never without hope, never alone.
Well, you know, I run into a lot of people too, and I try to make it clear to them, if, you know, and God is judging America. None of this could have happened without him allowing it, and we deserved it. We
mm-hmm.
have, I mean, how many babies can you kill before it's an abomination to a nation? How many times can you redefine his creation of sexual beings? How much pornography can you distribute worldwide? And America's done all of that. His church is in total disarray because, broadly speaking, with exceptions, his church has invited the world into the church instead of the other way around.
Mm.
I think this is God's judgment. But if it is, and if it comes to whatever conclusion it comes to, and if the Marxists take total control of America, they are going to shut down the churches. They're doing that all over the country. They detest private property. You're going to lose everything. But you won't lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
They can take all the material things from us, but the one thing they can never take from us is our trust in the anchor that holds,
mm-hmm.
the rock on which we can stand, the Creator God of the universe, and Christ is our Savior. They cannot take that away from us. It can get painful. And I think we have to step up and be ready to do some suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've gotten so soft, I question how many Christians are really tough enough, with a backbone enough, to be able to stand for Christ under severe persecution, which we have never had in my lifetime. The only generation in the history of the world that's never had religious persecution. Well, we're getting it now.
We're getting it. It's certainly on several different fronts. And if you're a resident in California, you've tasted that. Oh, without a doubt.
I got a lot of friends in California, Mike, and I tell them all the same thing. If I lived in California, I'd move.
Mm-hmm. And many of them are.
I know they are.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. It's crazy out there. But, you know, if you do abandon, then the light goes out. And, you know, I admire the ones that stay and fight. I sure do.
Well, I hope they fight and they fight hard. Hey, tell us about the Timothy plan in this economy, the change of administration. The thought about the future, we've seen the stock market go to a record height in the last couple of days, and now it seems to have faltered just slightly. What are your thoughts about what's going on?
Well,
in investing?
In 45 years, I've learned short-term gyrations in the stock market mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is the negative impact the socialist Marxist programs could have on our economy. I feel responsible for our shareholders. We have always been very conservative, and we're looking, in fact, we're about to bring out a couple of new funds that I think are going to be well received because they're going to protect people from the downside. And people just don't know what to do today. And neither do I. I mean, our managers are very conservative. They're investing in quality companies. But if these people achieve their agenda like they have throughout the world with socialism, it is not good for the economy. But I don't think it's going to crash tomorrow. I keep telling our consultants, to our board, that Wall Street is not our friend. Wall Street is funding a lot of leftist causes. It makes no sense, you know, when you think about it, but they are. That's why we do what we do at Timothy. We drew a line in the sand, Mike, as you well know. Now, in one more month, it's going to be 27 years. Where we said, you know what, we're going to build a mutual fund platform of multi-funds over time that will not invest in any company that is, for lack of a better term, funding an unholy agenda. Mm-hmm. They are the enemy. They are funding abortion and pornography and all the things we find abhorrent. And those in the body of Christ, when I talk to them or anybody else does about investing, their eyes kind of glaze over. They don't understand what it is. They put their trust in some financial advisor, and they have no idea where this money is invested. The companies in which they invest, companies they would not grace their doorstep to go in and buy their product, but in their funds, probability they own shares of those companies. You take the other side, for example, they use their money to accomplish their purpose. You take our side, we're a little oblivious to that. And if we ever, and it's gaining, we're gaining with people like, you know, on this station, we have Dan Celia for 3 hours.
Exactly.
He has really got an audience that is listening. And if we take the money that God has entrusted to us, and quit shaming him with it by being, you know, careless with not knowing where it's invested, and start taking it away from these companies that are funding evil, it's going to have an impact, because Christians have more money than the other side does. It's just they channel it and use it. We do not. Well, all we are at Timothy is a platform where you can invest in our. We have 12 different funds, different asset classes. We have 4 exchange-traded funds now, and we're about to file for 2 more, which are going to have a safety net to them. I can't talk about them for SEC regulations. But you can invest in Timothy and have full asset allocation, but better than that, you have the assurance that the money you're investing, you're not funding the enemy with, because why would you want to do that? And Kevin Freeman is a good friend of mine. I'm not sure if you know Kevin. He's going to be here. He's just a genius on economic and worldwide dangers. He made a statement to our board of trustees when I invited him to address us, I guess about 3 years ago now, because he loves what we do. Solid Christian guy. But he made a statement that didn't even occur to me until then. He says, if you are not carefully screening where you're investing these dollars God has entrusted to you, you could inadvertently be funding your own destruction. We've got to wake up, folks. And, you know, we do the hard lifting for you, but we're there for anybody interested. Just call us. And we understand mutual funds is what we do. But service is the business we're in. You call us, you're going to get a person answering the phone. They will connect you with a person who can give you what information you want. You're not going through some matrix. And the one thing that I find when they're on hold being transferred, if they're transferring to me, they say, hey, put me back on hold, you know, because we got good, solid Christian music on hold. And they were right in the middle of a song they wanted to hear.
That was my favorite tune right
there.
Yeah,
right.
That's
right.
Wonderful. Hey, Art, it's always great to see
Mike,
you.
Oh, Mike, it's a pleasure, man.
Oh,
thank
my goodness.
You for the
well,
good
this
work
is,
you're doing.
Oh, thank you. And you're very welcome. And we at The Shepherd are honored to partner with you, partner with Dan Sileu, have great programs like The Liberty Church, which is on every day, three different times, actually.
With my friend Paul Blair.
With Paul Blair.
I mean, boy, can that guy preach.
Oh, my goodness. And I love him. His stand on all of these issues and more is rock solid, down the line, biblical, and right on the mark for what we need to be hearing today.
And that is our mission at Liberty Church, because the saints are not being equipped. They're being entertained in way too many cases, thinking they're fine, going to church, but they don't have a biblical foundation. They don't have any choice when they come to Liberty. They're going to get a biblical foundation, and that will help them navigate these troubled waters. So we are thrilled to have Liberty Church. We're thrilled with Paul being the preaching pastor at Liberty Church.
Yes.
Even though we live stream him in, he does come from time to time, and he's going to be there in 2 weeks.
Wonderful. I got to have him up at the station when he's there. That'd be great.
Well, I'm not sure he has time because he's coming for CNP.
Okay.
And then coming to church and then getting on an airplane and flying out.
I understand. He's a busy man.
Yeah.
But thank you for your time today on The Shepherd.
I appreciate you all and Roger and the whole group here. You guys are great. Thank you for the ministry you're performing for Central Florida.
Art Alley from the Timothy Plan, and we'll be right back in just a moment. Here at the CPAC, and I'm happy to have an attorney with me, Hans von Spakovsky is here, and he is with the Heritage Foundation. First of all, Hans, thank you for coming today.
Oh, sure. I'm glad I could talk to you in person, actually, instead of on the phone.
Yeah, it's really kind of great to be able to do these face-to-face things.
Right.
And, you know, the noise in the background is something we just have to put up with in radio. I'm normally in a very quiet studio, and this is so much fun to be out here in the middle of it. And, boy, you talk about being in the middle of it. That is really where you are in your life right now, the Heritage Foundation and all that you're doing. One of the things that you have spoken on, written on, is this issue of where we are in America now as a result of, first of all, COVID-19. COVID-19 being the alleyway that people have traveled through to really see a lot of changes and a lot of issues now brought up as a result of voting laws being moved around, if you will.
Right.
And now we're at a place following the 2020 November 3rd election where many people are wondering, is it ever going to be safe to vote again in America? What would be your answer to that?
Well, my answer would be it depends. And it depends on two things. One, if Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer push H.R. 1 through Congress, then things will get much worse. If, on the other hand, that particular bill is stopped and state legislatures fix the vulnerabilities in their problem, like Governor Santis is trying to do, then things will get better. H.R. 1 is this bill. It's supposed to be on the floor of the House this week.
Mm.
It's an 800-page bill that would, in essence, federalize elections. It would be the national government telling the states how to run their elections, and all in a bad way. Take everything bad that happened last year, cement it into federal law governing the states, and then make things even worse.
Now, here's a question that I think a lot of people, when they hear this, there's a growing consensus, and I don't think 50% of the country is really out of the question as to those that would believe that the turnout, the way the things turned out in the election, was legitimate. So there's at least or near 50% of the country who believes that.
Right.
If this law passes and that becomes federalized, I think the first question is going to be, can this be overturned? Would it be possible for it to be overturned in 2 years or 4 years if things change?
Well, if you're talking about if, for example, Republicans took over the House and Senate, pulling it back, yeah, maybe, although it's pretty difficult to do that. If you're talking about the courts, look, there are parts of this bill that I think are clearly unconstitutional. There are other parts that may be constitutional but are just bad policy, and in fact remind me of what Justice Antonin Scalia once said when he commented that, you know, there are a lot of things passed by Congress that may be stupid, but they're still constitutional.
Yeah, I understand that there's a lot about that. There's wiggle room in the Constitution for many things that people think are stupid or think that are really nonsensical. And we're seeing that term be really applied on many fronts of these executive orders that President Biden has put out, like, for example, the Equality Act that just passed in the House. And there's obviously some tension awaiting it in the Senate. What are your thoughts about that one?
Again, that is a law. Look, folks are already protected in this country for being discriminated against under the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and other federal laws. Unfortunately, this law that they're trying to pass would have all kinds of bad effects because it would totally extinguish the ability of states and other organizations to make any kind of distinguish between biological males and biological females. And to just give you a quick example of that, think about all the student female athletes out there, the ones who are really good at their sports in high school, who want to win scholarships for college. This law would make it impossible for high schools to prevent biological males from competing as females and basically taking away their ability to earn those kind of scholarships. I mean, it's just that's just one of many results. Another one is it could prevent states from having any kind of restrictions, for example, on abortion, because that might be considered a violation of law. It's just an all-around bad law that should not be passed.
It seems to be the thing that we are facing right now, that with all of these turns that are difficult, and going back to the voting one, the one thing that I guess people look at with hope for change in American politics, if they don't like what's there right now, the all-consuming thought in the past has been, you know, give us a couple of years, we'll vote that guy out or we'll vote that lady out. With these things going back to the integrity of our system, that becomes now a question mark as well.
Yes.
So the point is that what can people do? What must leaders do? What can states do in this interim to kind of bring back a bit of confidence again?
I think there's two things that need to happen right now. First of all, citizens all over the country need to be contacting Congress, contact their representative, contact their U.S. senators, and talking to their state legislators about doing the same thing to stop H.R. 1.
Mm-hmm.
And this should be a bipartisan thing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because even Democratic state legislators in places like Florida and elsewhere should not want Washington telling them how to run elections in Florida. And that is what H.R. 1 would do in a bad way. If H.R. 1 can be stopped, the second thing that needs to happen, and again, this is folks need to demand this of their state legislators, and state legislators need to do this, they need to fix the vulnerabilities in state laws with regard to elections. And there's a whole list of things they should do. It's everything from making sure that you have a voter ID law that applies to both in-person and absentee balloting. It's to putting in certain safety protocols for the use of absentee ballots, like requiring a witness signature, and cleaning up voter registration rolls, which are in terrible shape. There's too many people who are registered in more than one state who may take advantage of that to vote illegally in more than one state, and it's because states aren't doing a good enough job of maintaining the accuracy of their voter rolls. All of that can be fixed with a lot of simple common sense steps.
One final question to have, and this one is, it bugs me when I think about it. If a person is found out later, after the fact, that they committed a crime, they can still, within statute of limits, they can still be prosecuted, they can still be charged, and they're still a penalty to pay. For the states that bypassed illegally voting standards that were set up about how to change things like mail-in ballots,
right,
where they had no legal bounds to do that, is there any past now, is there any recrimination looking back over our shoulder that we can do with that?
Unfortunately not, and a terrible example of that just occurred this past week when the U.S. Supreme Court refused to take up for review a case out of Pennsylvania,
yes,
which involved the Secretary of State with the connivance, and I use that word deliberately, with the governor and the state Supreme Court to basically ignore and change the law on the receipt of absentee ballots.
Mm-hmm.
And under the U.S. Constitution, it's the state legislatures.
Yes.
They are the ones that set the rules. And what should have happened is the Supreme Court should have taken that case, should have said what those state officials did was unlawful, to make sure it doesn't happen again. Unfortunately, I consider it a dereliction of their duty to uphold the Constitution. They refused to take the case.
Well, they have ducked, as one of my
yes.
friends said. They ducked not only that law, they also ducked several other issues that would have been brought up leading up to the January 6th debacle that happened. And you just wonder what is going on in the Supreme Court's mind with the current makeup that we have in the Supreme Court. Why would they be ducking on something like that?
Well, I can't explain why Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett ducked it. By the way, the three dissenting judges who said, hey, we need to take this case, of course,
right,
were Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Neil Gorsuch. And they were right about that. Chief Justice Roberts has unfortunately become the swing vote on the Supreme Court ever since Justice Kennedy left. And I think he wants to avoid the court making decisions that will be somehow politically controversial to the left, and so he will often side with the liberals. And what he doesn't seem to understand is, he does that because he thinks, oh, this will keep what we're doing from looking political. But by doing that, he makes what he does look political.
And it is political.
It is political,
yeah.
Exactly right.
And so that's the thing that I just can't understand, and I am not an attorney. I don't understand a lot of these things, but from the school of common sense, it does not make a lot of sense to me why on something so critical, because if the Supreme Court would have taken that case, it would have put some bite
yes,
into these
absolutely.
Issues.
Yeah.
And so you've just confirmed what I've feared that would be the answer, is that there's not going to be anything that's going to be done. There's not further recrimination paid against those who violated. And that alone right there seems to be an enticement for future problems in this area.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And that's exactly what Clarence Thomas warned against. You may not be a lawyer, but you just showed more common sense than the Chief Justice did.
Well, thank you. Coming from you, sir, that is a big compliment, and I really do appreciate it. Thank you for dropping by today.
Sure thing.
And talking.
Happy to do it.
And thank you also for making the stand at the Heritage Foundation that you do, for fighting the fight that you're fighting, and for being here at CPAC, and the words that you spoke today. We appreciate what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hans
Bye-bye.
Von Spakovsky is my guest. And that about does it for me today from CPAC. I hope to have another program Monday of some of the interviews that didn't make it on these two. We'll be back again on Monday right here on The Shepherd.